Hello, Tom McSweeney here, and you're welcome to my Seascapes Maritime programme, with the voices of Irish maritime people discussing current topics in maritime Ireland. This programme comes to you on the Marine Times website. The definition of a scandal is something that causes a general feeling of outrage and indignation to a particular group, which definitely applies to the lengthy problems of licensing in the aquaculture sector. There are unreasonable delays at all stages throughout the licensing process, creating uncertainty for investment and the future of the next generation of producers. That's according to IFA Aquaculture, the primary representative body for the sector. It's almost impossible to get certainty or clarity about the licensing process run by the Department of the Marine. It's been going on for many years. It's an unacceptable state of affairs. 31-year-old Lee Hunter set up his own oyster farm at Trawina Bay near Dunglow in County Donegal. His father was a pelagic fisherman, but with tighter quotas and more difficulties facing the industry, oysters seemed a good option. Lee followed his father's small farm, gaining his own license after studying marine biology, working on farms in Ireland and France to build experience. He employs two people, also has temporary assistance, and has developed the oyster pitch, using sound technology to monitor oyster production. A young man with a job at home, and one of the few in his group who were able to remain, stay and work in their native place, as he told me.
It's incredibly frustrating. And, I'm in the middle of two applications at the minute, and I have a big over and back with the department. Just simple things based on we have to comply with birds directives and, you know, because we're working in the marine environment, there's a lot of protected status, not like farming on land at all. And we have to comply with a lot of things, but the main problem there seems to be with licensing is that there's never any clarity or responsibility for that matter within, you know, the agencies who are taking care of the licensing. It's a big problem with lots of holes in it. It needs a good shakedown.
It seems, from what I heard, there doesn't seem a lot of urgency at the department level about sorting out the difficulties, despite the fact that they create huge pressures on those who are operating. Am I right in that?
They like to say that they have urgency behind them, but if you just look at the numbers, I think that tells a different story. That I think if you looked at the Dataroctus meeting, I think it was something in the 600 number licenses that are waiting a determination, and 300 and something of them are just waiting on appropriate assessments. So it's it doesn't seem like much of an urgency within departments, in my opinion. Now, I also know that it is very much a understaffing and underfunding issue. The department has recently assigned two new roles to try and help with the backlog in the Marine Institute, but it's just putting a band-aid on a much bigger problem.
It doesn't seem very encouraging. Well, you started, obviously, at a young age to get into the business, but it doesn't seem it would be encouraging to young people to get into, and the industry, obviously, as Finian O'Driscoll, the chairman of IFA, was saying, needs more young people coming in to ensure its future.
Yeah, absolutely. A big problem we have in our locality is even just social license. That, you know, the community doesn't, aquaculture is a very new sort of farming, and it doesn't have the long-standing stature as agriculture. So everything that seems new seems, you know, there's a lot of, you know, not in my backyard and things like this. Mm. And it is, it's extremely discouraging because making an application and starting a farm is a relatively easy process in the actual application part, but receiving it and then working it and the years it takes to even turn an income, because it's such a long, like an oyster, it's 3 years before you can sell the product that you grow. So there's a lot of investment that's needed also. Yeah, it's very difficult to see it as something for young people to get into. But for me, as an example, I'm just about the only one of my friends who actually stayed in Donegal, because I had the opportunity with aquaculture to stay here, and they didn't. It was thing that I had a foot in the door, and I think I just got in early enough. I started, like, well, my father has had a farm my whole life, but it was a very small, just, he was a pelagic fisherman, or is a pelagic fisherman, and the idea was, well, we can see these quotas getting cut more and more every year, so oysters seem to be a good industry to get into, because they could work them during the summer and then go fishing during the winter. So the two of them worked hand in hand. So that's kind of how I would have started into it as a family business. But since going to college and coming home, particularly after COVID, I decided to make a large investment into the oysters. So pretty much from about 2020, I've been growing my production from, I would say, 5 to, we're definitely over 50 ton now, and hopefully growing more if we could get some licenses to allow for expansion within a reasonable time frame, that is.
It's a tough business.
Yeah, it's not easy, but there's a lot of advantages to it. Like I said, I get to be at home, and it is a good job. It's outside, it's in the elements. Sometimes that can be bad, but a lot of times it's very, very beautiful. At the minute now, I've got two full-time staff, and we take in a couple of the local lads who'd still be in school, and they come in at the weekends and help out. So it's a nice little community job as well. That, you know, there's only so many cafes and restaurants that people can get, or young people can get work in around here as well.
And from the point you were making there about being able to stay at home, that's very important in giving jobs locally and enable people to stay in their area, yeah?
Yeah, I this is what I don't understand about the lack of a social license when it comes to aquaculture in particular, is it's not just a summer job. It's a good, solid, year-round job, and there's so much potential in all areas of the coastal communities around Ireland, and particularly with, I'm sure you're very, very aware, with the state of the fishing industry. It's these kind of jobs that are exactly what's needed, and it's exactly what the government needs to be promoting at a time when they seem to have lost control of the fishing industry. This is also the best thing about the aquaculture, is it's not an extractive business. You know, the animals that we grow, whether like in the shellfish sector, we take them in as seeds, and they're much like a crop. We take them in as seeds and we grow them, and they're an environmental benefit when they're in the water. They filter out the water every day, and nothing is extracted. The rest of the environment can continue to grow, and if not thrive, because I know around my oyster farm, you see things around the farm that you don't see anywhere else in the bay, because it's given structures and homes and literal habitats.
Lee Hunter and his oyster farm in Donegal. His determination is impressive. In the February edition of the Marine Times newspaper, where I'm executive editor, I've more about the licensing scandal. There should be a reasonable system for how long it takes to process a license application. The scale, contribution and performance of Ireland's ocean economy is not particularly well known by public opinion. It should be, because its total economic contribution to national welfare is over 17 billion euros, when indirect impacts are included, and it supports more than 109,000 jobs. These figures are outlined in the Marine Institute's latest report on Ireland's ocean economy. Jenny O'Leary led the Institute's team which compiled it.
The highlight is that our ocean industries are generating a turnover, and it's as it is in the report, of over 8 billion euro and employing nearly 50,000 people directly. But I suppose when you look, Tom, at the indirect, when you add the indirect and the direct together, you're talking about over nearly 110,000 employees are reliant on our ocean industries. Asking people what is their understanding of the marine sector and what do they think are the jobs, we get the same answers back. It's always about fishing and shipping. So the main message from our report is it's, even though they're extremely important sectors, that it is much more diverse than the traditional sectors that are in people's minds.
And that's very important to get across to people, isn't it, Jenny?
Absolutely. And I've been working in this area now, Tom, for over 25 years, and I've seen major improvement in terms of the knowledge. And this is the importance of this report, because if you can't value your industries, it's very difficult to talk to policymakers and to also speak to people on the street in terms of what the value is and the benefits it provides. The second thing, I suppose, in terms of the key messages is its growth, major growth over the last 10 years and continues to grow. Albeit slowly, which is in the last year, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, because I suppose one of the questions we have is, you know, is growth always what we're looking for in our ocean economy industries, or is it sustainable growth? And over the last year, the growth that we've seen in turnover is reported at 6%, GVA 5%, unemployment is slowing at 1%. The next point, I suppose, outside of the annual trends, is looking at the five-year trends and the 10-year trends. And I think this is the benefit of having this data. We now have data going back to 2014. And it's only when you see these trends that you actually start to understand what's happening in our ocean industries. We hear, as you know, on an annual basis of you know, crisis in our coastal communities with the recent news with the impeding fishing quota cuts. But yet, when you look at the data, it very much points to that our seafood sectors are still, no matter what is happening with them, extremely important to our coastal communities from an economic term, as well as obviously from a cultural side of things as well. So what the report shows, looking at our sectors, the main sectors in our ocean economy are tourism and marine and coastal areas, shipping and seafood. And obviously it becoming more important, or becoming as important these days, is actually, I suppose, renewable energy and offshore energy. In terms of employment, we have tourism. You know, it's 64% of our ocean industries relies on our tourism product in marine and coastal areas. But interesting enough, seafood is still second in terms of second highest employer in Ireland, actually, in our ocean industries. And as you know, most of that is in our, you know, in our important rural coastal communities. And shipping is third and 10%. We did an analysis on 2014 and 2024 data in terms of changing composition and how much has it changed between the top three industries, which, as I mentioned, are tourism, shipping and the seafood industries. And interestingly enough, seafood is still up there in terms of second highest employer. Tourism continues to be the highest employer. And we're seeing, again, collecting our data and the long-term trend data, it is showing us the change in that industry. And whereas before a lot of the cruise liners would have been going into the major ports, such as Dublin and Cork, we're now seeing them going to a lot more of the county council-run ports and the smaller harbours. And again, we're very interested in tracking that and trying to understand the impact of that. So in the past, our ocean economy figures have been very much used in national marine planning, such as harnessing our ocean wealth and the government monitoring, I suppose, the targets that were set out under that plan. More recently, it's been used, the data, as baseline data for our national marine planning framework. And now that the data and our team here in the Marine Institute have actually been asked through our work to support the national DMAP for offshore renewable energy. And one of the things specifically we've been asked to do is to to work on a social and economic impact assessment of the new plan. So very exciting times, I feel, because under legislation, you don't have to do a social economic impact assessment. You have to do a strategic environmental assessment. So it's very telling, I suppose, that the government are now, and that government department, are looking to do the social economic impact assessment and fully understand the impact of these new industries, such as offshore renewables, on our coastal communities, the impact on other industries, whether it be positive or negative.
A good point there made by Jenny O'Leary, who led the Marine Institute's team for the report on Ireland's ocean economy. Total economic contribution to national welfare, over 17 billion euros. Remember that figure. Brendan Behan was once a part of the maritime workforce, as historian Anton O'Callaghan recalls.
Famous Irish writer Brendan Behan's father, Stephen, was a house painter. So maybe that's why Brendan, having been in the IRA from his teenage years and having spent time in prison on a range of charges, including the attempted murder of two Garda detectives, in 1950 embarked on a potentially new career when he was employed by the Commissioners of Irish Lights and sent to paint the lighthouse at St. John's Point in County Down. One of Ireland's most famous literary sons, he was born Brendan Francis Aidan Behan on the 9th of February 1923 at Holles Street Hospital in Dublin. His mother, Kathleen Kearney, was a close friend of Michael Collins, and Father Stephen had fought in the War of Independence. Steeped in the stories and ballads of Irish republicanism from his earliest years, little wonder that he joined Fianna Éireann, the youth branch of the IRA, at 14, and became a member of the IRA proper at 16. His literary genius was not yet recognised, but there were signs. At 13, he undertook an apprenticeship to follow in his father's footsteps as a house painter. But at that age also, he wrote a lament to Michael Collins called The Laughing Boy. He had poems published in both Fianna, the Voice of Youth Ireland, and the Irish Press, and it was while serving time in Mountjoy, following his attempted murder conviction, that he began the outline of his famous play, The Quare Fellow. Released under a general amnesty of IRA prisoners in 1946, he had poems and short stories published in, among other publications, The Bell, the leading Irish literary magazine of the time. His personal life was fraught with difficulties. Famously, his dependence on alcohol impacted him, although he usually made light of it, saying at one time that he only ever drank twice, when he was thirsty and when he wasn't. Perhaps seeking stability, perhaps seeking a steady income, in 1950, employed by the Commissioners for Irish Lights, he set forth to County Down, paintbrush in hand, to paint the St. John's Lighthouse. It wouldn't last. His first task was to paint the No Trespassing sign, to which he added off his own bat by order of Mr. De Valera. It wasn't long before Mr. Blakely, the principal lighthouse keeper, tired of Behan. In August, he wrote a now famous letter to the engineer in charge, Irish Lights Office, Dublin. Regarding painter Brendan Behan, Blakely wrote, his attitude is one of careless indifference, and he has no respect for the commissioner's property or stores. His language is filthy. He is not amenable to any law and order. He is the worst specimen I have met in 30 years' service. I urge his dismissal from the job now, before the place is ruined. Unsurprisingly, shortly after that, Behan abandoned his painting career, went to Paris for a period, before returning to Dublin, where he set about writing full-time. His play, The Quare Fellow, was performed in 1954, and the autobiographical book Bortle Boy appeared in 1958, among other works. But his long-term drinking was taking its toll. Once again, he famously quipped that he was but a drinker with a writing problem. In March 1964, Nautical Lights played a final part in his life. While drinking in the Harbour Lights bar on Eklund Street, not far from the Guinness Brewery, Behan, famous writer and one-time painter of lighthouses, collapsed and died aged just 41 years at the Meath Hospital in central Dublin.
The story of Brendan Behan's involvement in the maritime sector, told there by Anton O'Callaghan. I have admiration for Micheál Mora, which has contributed a huge amount to fostering maritime culture on the River Lee in my native city, Cork. It has a boatyard at Crosses Green in the heart of the city near Southgate Bridge. Founded in 1993, it's a community enterprise and training centre, primary object to promote and foster maritime cultural activities and social inclusion. Its latest project, the Bordeauxrucht Pathways Programme, is to make the river more accessible to young people through rowing curraghs and sailing programmes, which Youth Programme Manager Claire Hayden outlined to me.
We are trying to introduce them to being on the water, but also, you know, trying to show them that they're part of a bigger thing, you know. So it's not just about them and their experience on the water, but it's trying to introduce them to appreciate that they're part of a bigger whole, you know. So say the Curraghs, you know, there's a huge heritage and history there around the Curraghs, and so, you know, in their part in being on the water in the Curraghs, I'd really like them to be, you know, to just have an appreciation of where they are in that bigger whole. And we try to do that in a way that we don't force it down their throats, you know. So it's even just getting to experience rowing in different curraghs, and in that way kind of seeing how varied they are, and then kind of you'll find them questioning themselves, you know, why is this curragh different to that curragh? You know, clearly they had a different purpose, they had a different role, they came from a different part of the country, and so they gradually have like an awakening to the kind of the variety and diversity of curraghs without us having to force it on them or foist it on them, you know.
A lot has been achieved by Mehel Mara.
Yeah, I'm slightly biased, obviously, when it comes to curraghs, but I think the curragh is a beautiful vessel. It's so light, so nobody has to be like particularly physically strong to row the boat. But at the same time, you don't have a rudder, you don't have a cock, so you do require skill in rowing the boat, because it is the rower who is doing the steering of the boat. You really have to get a read of the conditions that are in place on the day. And we find that as well with our young people. You know, in the beginning when they come down, I might tell them what the wind is doing on the day. I'll tell them what the tide is doing on the day. And they mightn't tune into it. They're just focused on getting on the water and getting their time on the water. But very quickly, they realise how relevant this information is to them.
So tell me about the Bordeauxrucht programme then. It's really attracting, I suppose, a lot of young people who haven't had any previous marine experience. And what about the age groups involved? And what's the process?
So we work with young people from age 12 and up, basically. We're funded by the Cork ETB, through Cork ETB, by the UBU fund. We have, our target really is to work with marginalised young people. So young people that would not otherwise have access to the water. We work predominantly with youth groups, various groups from around the city coming down and rowing with us. So generally, it's a group that will come down to us for 1 hour per week. And the nice thing about that is it's not a big time commitment for them or for the youth worker.
Claire Hayden of Mehel Mara in Cork, outlining their Bordeauxrucht programme, about which you can get more information on email to bordeauxrucht@mehelmara.ie. That's bordeauxrucht@mehelmara.ie. And that ends this edition of Seascapes. Until our next edition in March, if you'd like to contact me, the email address is tommcsweeneyseascapes@gmail.com. That's tommcsweeneyseascapes@gmail.com. Seascapes is also on social media channels, Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and our website is at tommcsweeneymaritimepodcast.ie. That's the website at tommcsweeneymaritimepodcast.ie. Thanks for listening and being part of Ireland's maritime community, so important in an island nation. Until our next edition, the usual Seascapes wish of fair sailing.